Welcome to Open Your Eyes, a podcast designed to help us all open our eyes to a new view of life. Thanks for tuning in today. As we begin today, let me ask you a simple question. If nothing fundamentally changes this year, meaning if you live the next 12 months exactly the way you're living now, how will you feel when you look back 1 year from now? Not how will it look to other people, not how productive will you be, how will it feel inside of you? Because in my experience, our years are not set up to change us. They most often simply repeat the life that we already have, unless something interrupts that and results in something different or something better. So today, let's ask the question, what kind of year will it be? We're not talking about goals. We're talking about whether this will be a year you remember or a year that blends in like many of the years before. Let's get started. As someone thinks about the new year, they often think of goals and resolutions. But part of the problem with goals is they often don't have the energy, the wherewithal to lift our sights, to inspire, to move us. These goals are often things like do this every day or stick to a system or try harder. But if that in and of itself worked, most people would already have the lives they want. And the setting of unmotivating goals is how you and I lose years, maybe even decades in our life. We stick to the same script. We let the way it's always been dictate the way it will always be. And the truth is, big change doesn't start with behavior. It starts with identity. A different year doesn't come from doing more. It comes from deciding who you will no longer be and who you want to become. And that decision may be uncomfortable because it usually means admitting something painful. I've been living a life that doesn't fit me anymore, or at least I am not yet who I want to be. Let's consider a simple story about Daniel. Daniel's life worked, and that's the best word for it. Good job, a future that made sense, but inside, he felt something unsettling. Every year felt slightly smaller than the last. He wasn't unhappy enough to justify big changes, but he wasn't alive enough to justify not changing. And that tension, that middle space, is where people get stuck from time to time. It's the murky middle. In higher education, the term murky middle is widely understood. It means the first-year students who end up with a GPA between 2.0 and 3.0. And it's the students in this situation who represent the largest dropout group in higher ed. Students in this group are discouraged, unclear about their major, or haven't done poorly enough to have everything overhauled, but they haven't figured out the college routine such that they're clear about what their major is or have confidence in their performance. And this is not unique to college students. Perhaps you're building a business and doing so with mediocre effort and results. Perhaps you're moving along but not moving toward what makes you feel more like you. Perhaps you're in the murky middle. We often get into the murky middle because of the procrastination trap. You've been there, letting opportunities pass you by because you give into the choice of doing the easy things until not doing the hard things becomes habit. Have you ever been in the procrastination trap? Well, the word procrastination comes from the Latin word procrastinare, meaning to put off until tomorrow. It also comes from the Greek word akrasia, meaning to do something against our better judgment. The truth is, giving in to procrastination is not a matter of will. It has less to do with strength of will and almost everything to do with your inability to manage moods around a task. In a 2013 study, two British professors brought together the collective research done on procrastination and concluded one very important finding, that the way to overcome procrastination is not a matter of finding more self-will, but rather learning to deal with our immediate negative mood and finding something to carry us past that mood. When we think of doing something necessary, there's often a natural resistance in the form of a negative feeling. Those that overcome procrastination have a higher level motive that sees them past the temporary feeling of resistance. This is where identity comes into play, as that higher level motive. Think about actions you don't procrastinate on. Replying immediately to a close friend, brushing your teeth, protecting something you deeply value. You don't debate these actions. You don't motivate yourself. You just do them. Why? Well, because they align with your identity. They align with the type of person you want to be. You don't think, should I respond to this person? You think, I'm a close friend, so I will respond. You think, I want to have healthy teeth and I'm a healthy-minded person. So you brush without thinking. Often when someone says, I'm trying to write, they're procrastinating. When someone says, I'm a writer, they usually show up. The behavior changes not because of motivation, but because the action now confirms identity. Identity-based change works because it removes the internal argument. You're no longer asking, do I feel like it? You're acting from, this is what someone like me does. Most change fails because it's temporary performance. People act differently for a while, but they don't become different. Identity-based change works differently. Each small action becomes a vote for the person you're becoming. Consistency grows naturally instead of being forced. With identity, procrastination loses its purpose. I've learned that when identity leads, behavior follows. You don't need hype, you don't need pressure, you don't need to wait for confidence. You act because not acting would contradict who you are becoming. Dwayne Johnson's journey from an uncertain young man to one of the most recognizable figures in the world is often described as a story of hard work, discipline, and perseverance. And while those qualities certainly played a role, they don't fully explain the depth of his transformation. At the center of his life story is something more fundamental: identity. Johnson was born in May of 1972 in Hayward, California. His father, Rocky Johnson, was a professional wrestler, and his maternal grandfather was also a well-known figure in wrestling. Despite this family history, Johnson didn't initially pursue wrestling as a career. Instead, he focused on football from a young age and developed himself into a highly competitive athlete. Football became his primary ambition. Johnson earned a football scholarship to the University of Miami, where he played defensive tackle. He was part of the Miami Hurricanes team that won the national championship in 1991. Although he was not a starting player for much of his college career, he remained committed to the sport and believed it would lead to a professional football career. And after graduating, he entered the 1995 NFL draft, but wasn't selected. This marked a significant turning point, as professional football had been his primary goal and identity for many years. Well, following the NFL draft, Johnson signed with the Calgary Stampeders in the Canadian Football League. His time there was brief. He was cut early in the season, which effectively ended his football career. Now, he's publicly spoken about this period as one of the most difficult times in his life, and he frequently told the story that he only had $7 to his name when he returned home. Well, after football, he decided to turn his identity to following the path of his father and grandfather. So he trained extensively and signed with the World Wrestling Federation. His early wrestling persona, introduced as Rocky Maivia, was intended to honor his family legacy. However, this character was not well received by audiences. In response to the audience reaction, he adopted a new on-screen identity known as The Rock. This change marked a major shift in his wrestling career. As The Rock, he became one of the most popular and successful performers in the WWE. He won multiple championship titles and became known for his charisma, promotional skills, and presence. When he reinvented himself as The Rock, he wasn't just changing his stage name. He was aligning his external behavior with an internal identity that felt true to him. He embraced confidence and humor and intensity and charisma, and this transformed his career. Fans responded not because he was flawless, but because he was believable. Wrestling became a place where Johnson experienced the power of identity-driven success. When who you are and what you do align, effort feels purposeful rather than forced. Now, this lesson carried directly into his transition from wrestling to acting. a move that many people doubted would be successful. At the time, professional wrestlers were rarely taken seriously in Hollywood, and Johnson faced criticism for his early film roles. Instead of trying to imitate established movie stars, he once again relied on his identity. He didn't attempt to erase his wrestling background, but integrated it into a broader identity that included humor, vulnerability, and leadership. And over time, audiences began to trust him, not just as an entertainer, but as a consistent presence. His early acting roles included appearances in television shows and films, such as The Mummy Returns and The Scorpion King. At the time, there was skepticism about whether a professional wrestler could succeed as a leading actor in Hollywood. But he continued to take acting roles while gradually reducing his wrestling schedule. And over time, he moved fully into acting. Through the 2000s and 2010s, Johnson appeared in a wide variety of films across multiple genres, including action, comedy, and family-oriented movies. His box office success increased steadily, and he became one of the highest-paid actors in the world. Dwayne Johnson's life illustrates that true growth is sometimes less about doing the same thing over and over again, but more about releasing identities that no longer serve you in who you want to become. By redefining who he was after football, embracing authenticity in wrestling, and then letting go of that and carrying his identity into acting and leadership, he built a life rooted in alignment rather than fear. So, here's an interesting question. Are you tolerating something in your life today that is keeping you from becoming who you're meant to become? Toleration is often quiet. It whispers, "Don't rock the boat, it's fine." Toleration is how people trade their future for stability. A different year starts. Perhaps this year could start with the statement, "I'm done tolerating a life that I don't really want." For example, in the building of your business today, what behaviors by you or others on your team are you tolerating? Are you tolerating mediocrity? Are you tolerating not sticking to your goals? As the famous saying goes, first we tolerate, then we accept, then we embrace. Before John Pemberton became known as the creator of Coca-Cola, he was a pharmacist in Atlanta, Georgia, living a fairly typical and unremarkable professional life. He ran a small pharmacy and mixed common remedies, earning a modest living. While he was competent at his work, there was little excitement, innovation, or recognition. For years, he followed the day-to-day routine of producing tonics and patent medicines in the late 1800s. The turning point had come when he was injured in the Civil War and became addicted to morphine, a common issue for veterans at the time. His personal struggle forced him to confront dissatisfaction, not just physically, but professionally. And he realized that he wanted more than a life of ordinary pharmacy work. He wanted to create something impactful. So he began experimenting with formulas, attempting to develop remedies that were safer and more effective than the standard products available. These experiments eventually led to the creation of a syrup that could be mixed with carbonated water, originally marketed as a medicinal tonic. He deliberately moved beyond his routine and comfort zone, experimenting, failing, and iterating on ideas rather than continuing a repetitive, unremarkable routine. Ultimately, his work resulted in the creation of Coca-Cola, a product that would go on to transform the beverage industry. And today, the people of the world consume over 1.9 billion gallons of Coca-Cola every year. So, to let identity drive our New Year's work, it might be important to decide who you want to be or what is your identity in order to begin to align your work with your sense of self. You know, I was in church last Sunday and the person speaking asked the congregation, "How will you measure your progress this year? What will be the measuring stick? What will be the benchmark?" He then said, "If your goal is to become a bit more like the Lord, like God, then you have your identity, that you will try a bit more to be like Him, more forgiving, more kind, more honest, more thoughtful." And this made a lot of sense to me. It was the type of thing that caused me to want to try to be more like Him. This is one way to fashion an identity of who we want to become. some of the most powerful identity-creating experiences that I've had came from people that I know. I work with a man named Alan. He and his wife, Karen, are two people that when I'm done with an interaction with them in a board meeting or conversation, I walk away and say to myself, I want to be more like them. Maybe you know someone like this. Alan, while very wealthy, is humble and kind and giving and good. He doesn't draw attention to himself. He builds others up. He gives of what he has. And I want to be like this. I'm sure that you've read a biography in your life that has captured your desire to be more like the person in the book. I remember reading the biography of John Huntsman. In the 1980s, Huntsman agreed, initially by a handshake, to sell a portion of one of his businesses for a set price. It was about $50 million at the time. During the long due diligence period and the legal discussions that followed, the company's value rose dramatically, reportedly to around $250 million. The potential buyer assumed they would renegotiate the price to reflect the higher valuation. However, Huntsman refused to raise the sale price. He insisted the original price agreed on should stand, even though it meant leaving a large amount of money on the table. This refusal to renegotiate based on changing market conditions, even when no signed contract existed, that stuck with me. And I admired his honesty in the face of reasons not to keep his word. I want very much to be like this. Maybe you find your identity by trial and error. You learn from your own experience how to distinguish between the person you want to become and the person you have a tendency to be. And this difference gives you the understanding to create an identity that you aspire to adopt. Here's the thing. Identity rarely happens by chance. It's something you have to watch for and identify with and take as your own. Maybe not all at once. At first, it may be a simple admiration or desire, but with some momentum, some thought, it begins to grow until it becomes strong enough to lift you to a new sense of self. Now, I have a good friend who's not the same person today as when I knew him 20 years ago. He's better and smarter, and his life is filled with positive relationships. And if you were to ask him why he has grown so much in his life, he will say it's because he's been blessed to be surrounded by exceptional people. But if you look closely, this didn't happen by chance. He purposefully put himself in situations to learn from and work with exceptional people. And this helped him fashion a new sense of who he was and who he could be. Perhaps one thing you and I could do this year to answer the question of who will I be at the end of the year would be to jettison those people in our life who don't elevate us and put people in our life who do. And maybe we could also be a person who elevates others, elevates them with our desire to work, lift, remain positive, give, commit, and all the good things that help us bring new and good people into our life. So let me ask you again, what kind of year will it be? A year where you grow with others or remain a little more disconnected? Or a year where you risk things? Or a year where you leave behind the less desirable things you tolerate and embrace the things you aspire to be? Because years don't change people, people change years. It's the year you say, I'm going to be this type of person. It's the year you decide, I don't want to just set goals. I want to feel something about who I'm becoming. You know, Viola Davis survived a childhood marked by extreme poverty. And later, she became a very respected actor. Then she won an Oscar. And after winning it, she said something unexpected. She admitted she was disappointed, not because she wasn't grateful, but because the roles that she was being offered didn't reflect her true identity, her humanity. I think people expected that she'd just be grateful and go on with what had been happening in her career thus far. But Viola chose something else. She stopped accepting roles that didn't measure up to who she wanted to be and what she wanted to represent. She started producing her own work. She slowed her career down to deepen it. And that decision cost her some momentum. It made people uncomfortable, but it gave her agency. Some of the hardest changes happen after success, when you realize achievement alone doesn't equal alignment with who you're meant to be. This is a great lesson for you and me. Perhaps you've been building a business with some success, and maybe it's time to stick with your identity rather than continue to drag tired team members along. Maybe a new team is in your future. You know, the Eagles were perhaps one of the most successful rock bands in history. However, in the years before their breakup in 1980, drummer and singer Don Henley was tired of the professional tensions, creative disagreements, and exhaustion from constant touring. Don, along with Glenn Frey and other band members, faced growing conflicts over the band's musical direction. Henley wanted to grow. He wanted more personal, introspective, and politically aware songwriting, while other members had different priorities. There were disagreements over songwriting control, musical direction, lifestyle, and personal issues. Constant touring, heavy partying, and lifestyle differences amplified these tensions. In interviews years later, Henley explained that the band had become a business, more than a creative partnership. The internal politics, combined with exhaustion, made collaboration difficult, and he decided that stepping away was the healthiest option to help him become who he wanted to become. So after the Eagles split in 1980, he didn't waste time. He released his first solo album, I Can't Stand Still, in 1982. The single, Dirty Laundry, which criticized sensationalist journalism and TV news, became a major hit and helped establish Henley's voice as a solo artist. His second album was a huge success. It included some of his biggest solo hits, The Boys of Summer, All She Wants to Do Is Dance, and Not Enough Love in the World. His solo career earned him 6 Grammy Awards, and he used his solo career to evolve as an artist. Maybe you and I can consider what things we need to leave behind this year to become who we want to become and answer the question, what kind of year will it be? Maybe you can part with sleeping in, leave behind selfishness, be more genuinely kind to people. Maybe give a bit more consideration each day to who you are and a little less to who you've been. I want to be a grandfather whose grandchildren feel love from him. I want to give myself to this identity this year. So there's probably a few things I need to let go of to help make that happen. You know, a lot of people will spend this year fixated on trends or social fads or the momentary crisis, but maybe you could focus on what will still matter in 5, 10, or 15 years. Things like character and discipline and patience and wisdom, hard work. These are constants that help form identity. The world will always be chaotic. There will always be noise. And the only way to stay grounded is to focus on what actually matters and who you are becoming in the long run. I know that in order to be the person I want to be, I must watch my diet. I'm talking about my information diet. I need to clean it up. Read not the times, Thoreau wrote. Read the eternities. In other words, read biographies, read history, learn a language, study people and cultures. Read less chaotic social news, read stories and take joy in the goings-on in the lives of your team and family. Read scripture. You know, this new Chinese year, which starts February 17th, will be the year of the fire horse. The characteristics of the fire horse are energetic, courageous, charismatic, ambitious, and fast-moving. In other words, this year is the year for bold action, creativity, leadership, and fast-moving changes. This rare combination of fire and horse occurs only once every 60 years, making this year a significant year for leaping forward in more significant ways. So, as we end today, I ask you, what kind of year will it be? Maybe you could take a little time to reconnect with your identity, to who you really want to be at the end of the year, and let that feeling, that identity, motivate you to move past the small procrastinations and areas of resistance and do what you know you were meant to do. I'm certain that God and life have more in store for you and me than we think possible. He sees us as we can be. And that view, God's view, is waiting for us if we set our sights on who He wants us to be. Most of all, thanks for being here today. And don't forget to join us next week for another episode as we seek to open our eyes to who and what we can become.